Welcome back. We're going to do something very unusual this hour, talking to a former NASA space shuttle scientist, Clark McClelland, a chapter from his book recently on Rents.com, and Greg Evanson is going to join us as well. Let's first say hello to Clark and welcome him back. Hello, Clark. It's been many years. Hi.
Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I'm still here. How are you? How are you feeling? All right?
I got some problems, but I took care of some of it today, and I'm feeling a little bit better now.
Good, good. All right. Tell our listeners, please, about your background with NASA and as a shuttle scientist.
I'm a shuttle SCO. I wouldn't call myself a scientist, but I was in science with the science of astronomy. But the spacecraft operator was a ground test astronaut for NASA, and I assisted the actual manager of the program there when I was at the OPF, where they actually operated and created actually what the whatever shuttle mission was going to be would fly.
I see.
And I was there. I was there from 1958 to 1992. And
well, you saw the whole thing, didn't you?
Oh hell! So far, I've seen 681 missions. That's a lot of rockets and money through the taxpayer.
Wow, that's a lot of things to see and have in
your
mind.
I've been there for good times with the shuttle, Challenger, watched my friends fall from the sky. Judy Resnick was a good friend of mine, and the rest. And I watched it hit the ocean and splashed. And my heart just, I cried.
Of course.
And then Columbia, I had friends in that too. And my OPF crew was sent out to recover what fell in Louisiana and various other areas over there. And they were told to watch out for radioactivity.
Yeah, I remember that story leaked out later.
Yeah, the radioactivity was coming from the spy device that the Israeli pilot on board called an astronaut. And I'm sorry he had to die, but he had that with him. And it, and the radioactivity apparently was falling on the ground when the Columbia exploded in the atmosphere. And they gathered it all, and one of my best friends there that was on my team, he's a Cherokee Indian. And then I tried to reach him. I finally did, and I found out he became ill after he came back from the mission to recover the bodies, parts, the helmets, the various other things. He may have possibly, and I can't prove it, but he may have possibly come across some of that radioactivity and may have caught some of that. He may be sick now. I don't know where he's at. I can't reach him. So then, too, I launched in the Mercury program, the Gemini. I met JFK at the Gemini pad 6 days before he was murdered.
Wow.
And he gave me a patch from his jacket or sweater. He snuck it to me.
Really?
I had written a report for UFOs from various astronauts I spoke with in my pocket in an envelope I was going to mail to Donald Kehoe, National Investigation Committee on Aerial Phenomena. I had Unit 3 in Florida. And he handed me his patch. Before he left, he was with astronaut Wally Schirall, my friend. Wally's dead too now, and he had his hand towards me. I had the envelope in my hand this time, and he shut his hand on it, and he put it in his pocket. I hope to God at least he may have had a chance to read it before that day in Dallas.
Right, Right.
But I've met so darn many famous people.
Wernher von Braun, of course.
Von Braun and, all the rest of the German scientists were friends of mine there. The director of the Space Center, I won't name him yet, I have a chapter about it. He was the actual director and top scientist for the Glock Bell project for Germany. I mean, my God.
Now, tell our listeners what that was.
Well, the Glock device they were creating was being invented by the German scientists, and they were excellent scientists, to create a craft that would fly with anti-gravity. And also, too, it had other methods and ways that it could be used possibly for even time travel. So they were working on it at the end of the war, and then a lot of the scientists from Germany, along with Hitler and his wife Eva, escaped on a submarine, and they tell you Hitler died in the bunker. That's BS. The Germans told me when I asked them, did Hitler and Eva die in the bunker? They looked at me and smiled. I didn't have to ask them another question.
Yeah, they made it to Argentina, apparently.
Oh, they made it to there. They also made it eventually to Antarctica, where they had a base for him built there under the ice cap, through into the geography underneath. You know, it's a continent.
Mm-hmm.
And they built a submarine base under the ice shelf, and they had what they called the Shangri-La for Hitler and Eva to escape to.
Well, I heard they closed that down, and most of them migrated back to Argentina years later.
Well,
but
they may have.
I don't. Who knows? It's all, you know. You hear these stories.
Well, too, they were there creating spacecraft and aerial craft, and our 1952 flyover of Washington D.C., in my opinion, was not alien as much as it was German advanced flight characteristics of a disc-shaped object, and our jets couldn't keep up with it. That's my opinion.
Well, who knows, but it was an incredible sight.
Oh, yeah.
It changed the way the government really looked at the entire phenomenon.
That's right.
That's for sure.
And then this thing with Gary McKinnon, Jeff, let me just say
this. We know exactly, most of our listeners are up on this, so please do tell the story, because it's a very important one, and we'll, first of all, let me just say hello to Greg Evanson.
Oh, yeah.
Are you there, Greg?
I am, Jeff. Thanks very much for having me on tonight. It's a real
Hi, Greg. Clark.
Oh. How you doing, Clark?
Glad you're here, Greg. Let's hear a little bit about Gary McKinnon, what he found when he was on dial-up and actually hacked his way into the Pentagon looking for proof of UFO and ET involvement with his country and this planet.
He hacked into the NASA computer systems at the Johnson Space Center and other files in Washington, D.C., and some of our military files. He observed a secret international astronaut corps, and I knew about that, that have a huge fleet of spaceships in orbit out in space, not far from Earth. Gary discovered a list of what are called NTOs.
Right.
They're non-terrestrial officers.
Yeah, he had all the crew officers. The whole thing. Yeah,
yeah, he also heard them transferring crews from one ship to another.
We think that the reason they've been trying for over 10 years to extradite him here is that he, at least the government feels, he may have seen much more than he has talked about yet, and they want to make sure they wring his brain out and turn him into a vegetable or shut him up.
That's what's happening with him. He's got some disease. I forgot what it is.
Yeah.
But the non-terrestrial officers, he read on the list, and he also read or heard ships' names that he could not identify with any in our U.S. Navy or NASA or any ships on Earth.
There are no ships in the water, no terrestrial. These are non-terrestrial fleet craft assignments, crews, ship names, everything. And
my old U.S. ONI, Office of Naval Intelligence, has total control over all this secret space activity above Earth.
Right. All right.
It's
the biggest secret.
Yeah.
Well, next to the biggest secret, of course, is the fact that...
I suspect NASA astronaut, a friend of mine, Navy astronaut, Vice Admiral Richard H. Truly, he was selected to be in the Manned Orbital Laboratory, the MOLE project for the Air Force.
Right.
It was canceled. Then he joined NASA and flew two flights with Challenger and Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
But he, I believe, was taken into that secret group to become one of the secret astronauts. Now, I can't prove it, but... And then I've told, too, that there are flights from that secret astronaut crew that go back to the moon already, and also to Mars.
Well, I've heard this for years. Now, you've been on the inside at NASA on the Cape from 1959 to 1992. That's what you said?
1958 to 92, and my retirement was canceled. I'm living on only a small Social Security now.
Why was your retirement, Clark, canceled? Why are they getting even with you? Because
of what I know.
Mm-hmm.
I saw something else heading in towards Earth that's a massive object.
All right.
And they don't want that out either.
No, of course not.
And
listen,
course
let me ask you one other question, Clark, please, and then we're going to get to Greg here.
All right.
What I would like to know is how common was it among the astronauts decade after decade of, I mean, this is a long program, that there are extraterrestrial beings who are visiting here. How common was that knowledge?
It was more common than not for every mission. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And they would observe them, but they had that rule, military pilots, they were all military. Listen, Jeff and the audience, Greg, NASA is owned by the Pentagon. NASA is not a civilian agency. It never has been. I'll tell you why. The military owns NASA. They actually control this country. Everything that goes on, they say whether it goes or not. And it's worked fine up until now on this idiot that we have in the White House.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, now what we're going to do is pause for a few minutes and talk to Greg. Then we're going to come back to Clark, and he's going to tell us what he saw with his own eyes while working at the Cape and in Mission Control down there. Greg, again, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for being here tonight.
I appreciate that very much. Good to be with you.
All right. Now, tell us about your background, Greg, and then I'd like to hear your encounter, your story, and then we'll go back to Clark's and see if these two dovetail.
Well, thank you. My background is in law enforcement over several decades. I entered law enforcement in the 1970s,
mm-hmm.
and was selected initially as a Secret Service special agent. I got my letter of appointment, however, was never able to fulfill my duty station because we were budget cut during that same period in the early part of 1974 when the Secret Service protection was being extended to presidential candidates. So I went on to take the backup plan, which took me to the state of Kansas as a Kansas State Trooper. I was assigned from time to time with Governor's Security as well as other regular duties of an enforcement officer. I not only interviewed many people through those years who had experiences ranging from the occult to their own self-described contact with life forms that they did not recognize and could not verify as being what we would call normal species that we're familiar with. As a result of that, my interest carried over from college, where I had studied greatly about the influence of the occult in the Nazi period, and then how that carried on, of course, into our more recent times,
right.
Both with refugees from that area and my own study of that. In fact, I was to go back to interview one of the last living SS generals as an archaeological effort.
Mm-hmm.
So my interests took me in directions that you would not normally find a law enforcement officer going.
Right.
But I can tell you that my background really, Jeff, provided me with the opportunity to have the training to observe and to report and to draw some conclusions about what I saw that others maybe couldn't or didn't because they didn't have that extra component in their background. So it fast forward a little bit, and I have been looking at how is it possible that entities that we simply cannot explain are here at all? Are they a result of experimentation? Are they passing through some spiritual portal or gate?
Mm-hmm.
Are they being delivered here as a result of a contact with other species of people, aliens, whatever you might, however you might term that?
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it has come to this. The most compelling experience that I've had came as a result of an interview with people very close to me who explained to me that what they had seen one evening in the backwoods of Michigan was so compelling, and coming from three different directions, three different sets of people, but all related at different times, but very close together. What they saw, they could not explain. The size, the character, the appearance of this entity would have resembled what I would have called, from my experience, my research, possibly that of what we term Nephilim,
mm-hmm.
or the creatures that are moving through spiritual portals or gates. Very quickly, three examples. If we have the time, I'll give them to you very quickly.
Yes, go ahead.
One involved someone very close to me. Again, I'm not going to reveal because I want to protect them to some degree. But this individual was with two friends. They were traveling in a van out to a remote cabin where hunters and others go at various times for relaxation. And along the way, they had a little bit of an argument, and two of the boys just jumped out and started walking about a mile from the destination. As they did so, the boy driving turned around, came back eventually within a couple of minutes, but they were being paced in the woods by something just off the road. These are big football players. They were going out there for a weekend. They were so terrified that they were crying hysterically when the van returned. And as soon as they got in the van was rocked by something. They all three witnessed it. All three felt it. And later, I have in my possession a photograph of the windows of the van in the back that have very large-looking paw prints, if you will, or something like that. I can't determine. It has claws. There are claws on the end of it. As a researcher or a police officer investigator, I would have said that is first-rate evidence. And, this is here. We've got the pictures. And they did not see the beast or whatever it was, but they felt it.
Mm-hmm.
Right after that, two more folks from the same area and related to the boy, driver, they were leaving with some friends, and this creature jumped out from the side of the road onto the road directly in front of the van, and in a leaping fashion, getting down and kind of almost a crouch and leaping several feet, many feet ahead each time, described as a large, very large, hairy type beast with a light or bald colored area of fur at the base of the neck, long pointed ears, a very crunched up, very scary looking snout, short, brief
Jeez.
Legs on the bottom, and a massive back and big arms that they all witnessed in the headlights of the van.
Mm-hmm.
It jumped two or three times and jumped off the side of the road. Doing so, the jump, the final leap, was done in midair, almost defying the way we would normally see of any object going, especially a live one, in momentum, turned in the air and leaped into the woods.
It changed direction in the air. It changed course in the air?
Turned course in the air. That's correct.
Uh-huh.
So, how do we explain that? There's no way, really.
No.
The final one was by my wife and our daughter was at the camp waiting for some other people to arrive, and the motion light went off on a house just down from where they were standing, and a similar-looking creature one that these other folks had seen, walked out from the corner of the garage, the head being level with the edge of the garage roof, blocking out the light and matching the description I've already given for the sake of time here.
Yes.
They were terrified, went into the house, grabbed the only weapon I think they had in the place, and uh-huh. were basically waiting for the creature to follow them. It did not. But three almost exact renditions of at least two of them, I should say, for eyewitness. The third one was with the movement of the van. This is not unknown in this area. It has various names. Some people call it the Dog Man. Some people call it Yeti. Some others. But
Where was it, Greg? Excuse me. Would you please give me the location geographically again? Where are we?
I will tell you that we're in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. That's the area north of Wisconsin.
Good enough.
And it's in the central part of that Upper Peninsula. It's a very remote area, Jeff. I can tell you there's very few areas in the country that are this remote.
Wow. All right. Pretty amazing story, to be sure. There are strange things on this planet that may come and may go, and maybe they're here all the time. We don't know. But to presuppose we have all the answers is the height of arrogant stupidity. And stories like these, of course, are actual experiences of people, and to hear from someone of your background what you've just told us, again, should keep all of us, and I'm sure this audience is in line, of an open mind. We don't know it all. We never will know it all. And that may be as part of the magic, if there is magic, of being a member of this so-called sentient species of ours, which I view as frankly failing, if it hasn't already failed completely. But that's another story. Hold on just a second. We'll be right back. Our special guest tonight, Clark McClelland, and Greg Evanson, and we'll be right back. Okay, back with Clark McClelland, SCO for 1958 to 1992 at the Cape with so many missions you couldn't count them all, and Greg Evanson, former law enforcement officer who has just related three remarkable stories to us. All right, let's ask Greg to hang on and go back to Clark here. Now, Clark, as one of the key people in the entire history of the shuttle project and program and all of the missions, you were in a very unusual position to hear, to see, to talk to get to know people, some of the giants of our age, truly.
Oh, yeah.
But beyond that, Clark, you physically, visually saw some things. Now, you've described these to me. We know each other. These are part of your book called The Stargate Chronicles.
Yeah, may I mention that, please, Jeff?
Of course you can.
Okay, please, listeners, I live on a small amount of Social Security. My retirement was destroyed by the criminals in this government. If you would, please, if you have a little extra dollar, you could read my chapters on www.stargate.com/stargate-chronicles. That's a line between two letters, Chronicles, C-H-R-O-N-I-C-L-E, I think, .com, chronicles.com.
Right.
If you do that, I'd thank you very much for it. And yeah,
Clark, so let's Tell us what you saw. Just go ahead and tell your story.
Well, I myself, I was on duty one night in the operations center with another friend that was my crew member, and he had a master's degree test the next day. He was going to marry a beautiful young lady, the daughter of one of our engineers, and I said, go in there, and I locked him in a vault. I gave him a cup of coffee. I said, if you want more coffee, call me at my desk. I went out to get a coffee. I came back in.
Uh-huh. Why did you lock him in a vault, Clark?
Pardon me?
Why did you lock them in a vault?
Well, so that he would stay in there and study. He liked to wander around. I said, study for that darn master's degree.
All right.
And so he did. And we had a vault near. You could not hear through the roof like some Soviet satellites could do, and our satellites could do to them.
Uh-huh.
So I locked him in there, and then I went to get a coffee. I came back. We had six monitors, 27 inches at that time. I sat down. I think it was on the third monitor. I looked.
Now, hold on. There's a mission underway.
All
right. Now, there's a shuttle mission. The shuttle is up there.
That's
right. Clark is looking at six monitors. They're all showing video of the mission in progress. Go ahead.
We have various areas of the shuttle, the back portion, the ohms pods, the engines, everything else. And I looked, and there's two smaller NASA astronauts, maybe 6 feet or 5'10".
In the cargo bay. Standing in spacesuits. Now, they're outside the doors.
They were attached to the side of the shuttle.
Okay.
With a tether.
Mm-hmm.
In the center, just floating there, was an 8 to 9 foot tall entity. I can't say I can call it an ET, but behind the shuttle and the ohms pods was a strange spacecraft I had never seen before. Believe me, I have seen many spacecraft. This was not one of ours. And this here 8 to 9 foot tall entity was waving its arms, and it looked very much, Jeff, like it was giving orders to the two astronauts.
What was it dressed in?
In a tight-fitting, almost World War II-ish type-looking flight suit, like they wore for high altitude. And you'd think it would have been something else, but heck, he didn't need any more than that, I guess.
So, but it was helmeted and appeared to have
oxygen
breathing.
All right. Very helmeted. I looked to see if I could see any weapon, any type of gas tank. He had to breathe whatever he breathed. I don't know if it was oxygen or what. And then,
but he wasn't supposed to be there. And what are you saying at this when you're seeing this?
Well, I nearly fell off my chair and spilled the coffee on me because it shocked the hell out of me. And I didn't have anybody there as a witness because my witness was in the doggone vault.
Right, right.
I looked. We always had a tape in the VCR.
Yes.
I looked. I was going to start the tape and keep it. By God, there was no tape in it that night. The second crew, we were on the third crew, me and my buddy.
Second shift didn't load the machine.
No, they didn't load the damn machine. Can you believe it?
Yeah, I do.
I mean, yeah, there was some stupidity amongst the space people, too.
All right. Well, they're human. All right. Now, but what was up there in the cargo bay with these two astronauts tethered in their spacesuits was apparently not human, at least by our common definition of that term.
Exactly right. I don't use as many good words as you and Greg, but I get the point across anyway. I have a bad throat, so.
Now you
anyway,
sound fine, but hold on. I got a question, please.
Yeah.
You said it acted as if it was giving orders or somehow communicating something to the Americans.
Yes.
In their suits. Do you know who was there in that shuttle bay with that tall ET?
This was a top-secret mission of a space shuttle. I have a chapter that covers it with the entire crew. I investigated every crew person. I investigated to the point where I could tell their height and everything else.
Uh-huh.
And I have not published that because the crew is, of course, still alive. I don't want newspapers, TV, radio jumping on these people I'm that way. I will protect one of our astronauts with my life, or both, any astronaut. And I have a chapter written on this. It's a very long chapter. Sooner or later, possibly I'll put that out and let people read it. I was just hoping I could get a book published. What I might do now with my webmaster is publish 10 of my chapters on an e-book. And you said one time you might be able to do something to help us with that.
Oh, I always do. Of course I will.
And anyway, that's what I saw. Now, on the new chapter 7 that's on the site right now, it shows the photo of two astronauts in the crew compartment of the mid-deck. That's inside the spaceship with an 8 to 9 foot tall entity hunching down, bending over so it wouldn't hit its head on the overhead.
Is going on at the same time as the outside event?
No, it's not. No, this was an entirely new mission.
Okay.
A separate mission. Two missions that were observed by two aerospace engineers. That's why I'm not attacked on that, because how are they going to make me look like a fool? They'll look like a fool themselves.
All right, that's astounding. So was anyone around to witness the second experience you had?
That I can't answer, because the person that observed that for about 12 seconds, that's all. Mine I observed for a minute and 7 seconds. So I'm an artist. I can sketch things down right after I see them. Then I had a professional artist do it. That's the photo you see with them standing in the payload bay. Now, this new chapter shows the 8 to 9 foot alien or entity, whatever it is, standing with two small NASA astronauts that were getting ready to suit up and go out into the payload bay. They had another secret satellite or something to launch there. So these are two separate missions, actually several years apart.
All right, so the obvious inference here, it's not an inference, it's an indirect statement, that we were and are, at least at that time, meeting occasionally with visitors out in the shuttle.
That's right. But you see, the military astronauts, they have great, wonderful retirements like Edgar Mitchell and the rest. If they come out and talk anything about that, they'll lose their retirement. Who knows? Maybe lose their lives. Astronaut Jim Irwin, my good friend, born in the city I was born in, he refused an interview by someone one time. He said, I have a great retirement. I have a family I love very much, and I will not lose that for any reason. But then that same astronaut met me. I saw him in the crowd at the Philadelphia airport, believe it or not, with all the people there.
Right.
And we sat down for a good half hour, 40 minutes, and discussed things. I talked to him about what he saw during Apollo 15. He brought me three flags back from the moon and some Kapton gold tissue. And that's what I sent you in a photo.
Well, very honored. Thank you.
I'm going to send one to Greg, too. Now, he told me things about what he saw flying overhead, and he also saw certain other things I won't discuss right now. I've got a chapter on it. But he was able to see certain things on the moon that other people are now reporting. So
wow. All right. Now, all right. This is extraordinary. So I think what we're telling all of our listeners, Clark, is that you have one of the blockbuster books of our times, waiting to be published by the right publisher. Now,
that's
the question
right.
Is there a publisher out there who has the integrity, the courage, and the strength of character to do this, or will the feds come down on them and they'll just fold?
That's what happened, Jeff. Let me explain one thing. I had a publisher in China contact me. They wanted to publish the books. They said, we'll be back right in touch with you 2 to 3 days from now, but this is very exciting. We're very interested. 2 to 3 days later, they sent me an email. We have no interest any longer. So they were gotten to also. There's a world government. What I call it is dictatorial secret shadow government that controls not only this country, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. the world. Why they own us is because it's the New World Order, World Bank.
Right. Well,
anyone that owns the banks owns you and I.
We know exactly who those people are, and you're
talking
to an audience that understands fully as well.
That's right.
Let me get back to Greg now. Greg, you've certainly probably heard some of Clark's experiences before. These are really staggering events. His professional integrity is extraordinary, as is yours. This book obviously contains things that he is still honor-bound to at least refrain from publication right now, but he is looking for a publisher. What are your thoughts on what you've just heard, Clark, or Greg?
Well, when I base it against that which I have heard on my own, and I strictly spoke of the entities that were seen by others, I can tell you that my own experience, mm-hmm. One taking place in Tip City, Ohio, roughly 25 years ago, I had spoken to a group of folks there, and as I was leaving, a gentleman walks up to me, and I had referred to the fact that Dayton, Ohio, and Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, just south of us a little ways at that time. And I said, of all the alleged things that are going on there, the research and alien bodies and so forth that's been talked about, the gentleman walks up to me and he says, Greg, I want to leave you with this thought before I go. He said, there is absolutely no question that there are entities, aliens, if you will, but the only question we still have yet to resolve, this was about 1980, somewhere along in there, he said, is whether or not they are physical or spiritual.
Well, why not all of the above? I mean, we've got...
I agree with you, but that was
his open statement. Billions of planets in this. Yeah,
now
we have
billions.
Now, you
follow that with a few years later, in the state of Minnesota, I was asked to investigate by the wife, actually the widow, of a chief of police, a retired New York State police trooper who had moved to Wisconsin, a Wisconsin border town with Minnesota, right along I-94.
Yeah.
And she asked me to come over there and investigate her husband's death. The story that she gave me and that the mayor of the town at that time confirmed for me was that there, while on patrol, the officer had pulled up to an intersection just south of the town in the highlands, kind of in the bluff area along the Mississippi, and had observed a very large saucer-shaped object in a field just south of the town. He pulled up, shined his light on it, and it shined something back at him, a beam of some kind. The car immediately went dead. He was rendered unconscious, woke up sometime later from it. The car, a brand new squad car, was completely destroyed on the inside mechanically. All the circuits, everything that was electronic, were destroyed.
Huh.
And it was right next to a limestone quarry on this road. The farmer just down that I interviewed, just down the road about a half a mile, said he was sitting watching television. A brilliant blue flash filled his room. He got up and he just wrote it off as somebody welding at the limestone quarry, but there was no one there at that time. This entity, or this spacecraft rather, then left the area, according to this gentleman, at a high rate of speed. Now, he suffered for many weeks after that and eventually succumbed to injuries they could never completely quantify. But I know that during my investigation, I spoke to people there in the town.
Mm-hmm.
This was a regular occurrence in that area. In fact, it was so regular, some of the folks related an evening at the ballpark where they watched one of these saucer objects go across to that same area, across in the sky by the ball field, and then go down apparently in that same area for whatever reason, perhaps a source of power or something out there. So this has been a part of my life as well, and I'm still on that quest as a former law enforcement officer to try and get to the bottom of some of this, and we've got a long way to go. But I'm sure encouraged to hear from Clark and make friends with him deeply so that we can maybe try and get that
done. Oh, we're going to do that, Greg. Listen, please, Greg. Jeff, I'm asking Greg to explain to you what someone called him and explained to him about a city in Ohio where a man was at McDonald's.
All right. Yeah, we have about 6 minutes, so go ahead, please, Greg.
Very good. I'll make it very quick. He called and said, I want you to know this because I can't explain it, and I'm afraid. He said, I went into a fast food restaurant, he said, with my family. I noticed two extremely tall men. He said, I estimate in the 7-foot range, and he said they were different. They just had a different countenance, but they were in military uniforms. And he said, as one was picking something out of his pocket, he said, I just was watching him, and he said, I noticed that both of the individuals, as I began to look closely, had 6 fingers on each hand. And he said that they noticed me looking at them and gave a very, he said, one of those looks that you immediately turn away. And he said, my heart was racing. He said, I've never seen anything like it.
Nephilim. They were Nephilim.
The 6 fingers. Yes, I agree.
Yeah.
Well, now you know why I don't make public appearances.
I understand.
May I mention one more time, Jeff?
Yes, of course.
My website, please. I need some help. Please, people who's listening to this program, I'm in trouble. Even Greg's in trouble. Jeff's in trouble. We're all in trouble nowadays. Please open my website at www.stargate-. Hyphen is a line between two letters in the center. Chronicle, C-H-R-O-N-I-C-L, I.
C-H-R-O-N-I-C-L-E-S.
Chronicles. Yeah, Chronicles.com.
Uh-huh.
StargateChronicles.com.
Uh-huh. Sure.
Please. Thank you, Jeff.
Oh, it's all right. Now, once again, it's Stargate-Chronicles.com.
Yes.
And if you simply click on Clark McClellan's name in guests at Rents.com, you'll go there. Help this man out. He's an American hero. He's a patriot. He served our country's space program for as long as anyone would ever want to serve a space program, not to mention the U.S. Navy either. So let's help. And if anyone out there is involved with the legitimate, and I don't want anybody calling who isn't legitimate, in the legitimate end of the publishing business, this is something that you might want to discuss with Clark. There are too many people who have written books who have never seen a dime, even though they've sold tens of thousands of copies
of
their books, and we've got to be careful of that. So
that's right.
Remember, the government took Clark's retirement from him because he knows too much, and they're trying to make his life as miserable as possible. But you still hear in his voice pronouncements of allegiance and loyalty to honor and dignity. And he's a very unusual man, and I hope all of you will visit his website.
Well,
again,
Jeff Rents is very unusual, too, because he's a super patriot to this country, along with Jeff and I, along with Greg and I. And we're trying to help save this country because it's going down the drain real quick.
Jeff, if I could, I would to say that we are trying to get folks together and help train them for what they might be up against shortly. And I as well have a website. Just invite folks to go to it. It is TheHeartlandUSA.com. Please go there. We'll do everything we can to help you. We'd love to have
right.
that opportunity.
That's
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome. That's TheHeartlandUSA.com.
Yes.
The Heartland. I'll have that linked to your name in guests shortly. TheHeartlandUSA.com. Very good. Now, when you say prepare, train, what we're trying to do here, all of us in our own way, we're working different ends of the problem, is make Americans aware of the fact that this country has been penetrated and subverted, subjugated. It has been sold out by its own to a foreign power. And that's the tragic and sad truth. We are no longer in charge of our own destiny and haven't been for too long. This didn't just happen yesterday. So unless and until we wake up and realize that our country is in the hands of what I call abject evil,
that's right.
We don't have a choice or
no,
a chance.
No, there's not much choice
else.
Other than save our country.
No, indeed.
Anyway, one more last thing, please.
Go ahead.
Dr. Von Braun secretly was working on the Voyager mission into deep space. It's going to take a long time to arrive at where it was aimed.
Uh-huh.
It was aimed at Aldebaran, a large star way out there that has a large planet circling it. He was sent to do that because he's an Aryan, a German. The Aryans come from Aldebaran's planet.
Oh, very interesting.
And they're heading back this way. In fact, one just dove into the sun, gathered the energy to refuel itself, and then dove out again. It's on the internet today. But they're not identifying it as
well,
one of
the... I put that up, and it's a very unusual piece of footage from the SOHO satellite. I've never seen anything like it. It's hard to imagine that what we're seeing is a simple artifact of some kind of video anomaly that's translated through computer software.
Well, it's always possible, but what I could see there was they use the solar energy, which is electrical, to recharge their...
Well, whatever this thing was, it was damn near as big as the planet Earth, it looked
like. That's right.
Yeah.
And that's what I always heard, was heading in this way.
Very good. Let me say goodnight to Greg. Greg Evanson, thank you very much, and I'd like to invite you to come back on the program at some point. Please do get in touch with me. We'll spend a little more time with you. It's been a real pleasure having you on tonight. Thank you.
I will do that. Thank you, Jeff, for the opportunity. And Clark, you're a great friend, both of you. God bless you both.
I'm going to send you a piece of gold from the moon, Greg, whenever I can make it up. I make them myself.
Thank you, friend.
Jeff has one.
Yeah, that's wonderful. All right, Greg, be well, my friend.
Take care, Greg.
And Clark McClelland, again, let me tell everyone, Stargate-Chronicles.com. And you can go there, and he has a sample chapter up at Rents.com. This is truly one of the most amazing books, just waiting there for somebody to come along and publish it. And it takes a courageous, honest, honorable publishing company to do it. Let's hope that person comes forward. You can email me here if you'd like, or just go to Clark's website, Stargate-Chronicles.com, and contact him there as well.
That's right.
Clark, thank you for sharing.
Well, God bless you, Jeff. Thank God for you and me, because there's not many of us around lately.
Well, the ranks are thinning, my friend.
But, yeah.
All right, you continue to take care of yourself, and we'll be in touch.
And thanks for your help on the other things you sent to me.
Of course. My pleasure.
Okay,
all right.
God bless you. Take care, and good night to everybody out there. Open my website. Thank you, audience, for listening.
All right. Good night, Clark.
Good night.
All right. There's a very unusual hour, to be sure. Okay, we will pause and come back.